Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is loading. SteveJonesShow.com audio is sponsored by Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Call them at 800-609-9484 or visit them online at REWfinancial.com.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Good afternoon and welcome. Is that the start you wanted, Kev?
That's great. What happened? Are you ultra mellow today?
I feel great today. Thursday. It's the All Steve Jones Thursday. Wouldn't you feel happy?
I know I'm ecstatic for All Steve Jones Thursday.
Yes, I bet you are. Today's show brought to you by Rick Weibel at REW Financial, 800-609-9484, or go to www.rewfinancial.com. All right. Bill O'Brien is going to be on the show at Damon's later this evening, but we're also going to have the representative from Ireland on tonight. I have, by the way, a series of questions that Kevin sent. Okay.
Is this for Coach O'Brien, or is this
for the Irish dude?
I was going to say, please don't ask him about third down conversions then.
No. The first question I have here from you deals with the hours of the Guinness Tour. Okay.
And did you also get our Irish eyes really smiling?
Let's see here. Where's the Blarney Stone?
Another good one.
Let's see. Where's the next one here? Can I have reservations at Ballybunion? Tea time for 4. Okay.
Wait, 4 people or 4 o'clock? Because I don't want to bring anybody else with me.
I put down 4 o'clock Greenwich Mean Time.
Oh, okay, that's fine then, yeah.
Let's see. The other questions I have here. Can I go to Belfast and see where they built the Titanic?
That would be awesome.
Okay. Let's see. What else do we have here? Can I go to... Oh, this deals with Irish stew. We'll file those away.
You missed the most important one. Can I have a seat for the game?
Coming up next, a look at the Nittany Lions and Central Florida on Inside Penn State Athletics, presented by Learfield Sports.
Ready for a quality pre-owned vehicle? Well, get them before they go to auction at Sunbury Motors. Go to sunburymotors.com and click on pre-auction blowout.
Like a Ford Fiesta four-door sedan, SEL, $11,995. 2006 Pontiac Solstice two-door convertible, super low miles, only $15,521. A one-owner 2011 Hyundai Sonata 2.4-liter hybrid for just $17,387. 2012 Ford Econoline cargo van, fully serviced, $18,996. 2010 Ford Explorer Sport Track 4-door, $24,352. And a 2011 Lincoln MKX with a 6-year, 100,000-mile warranty, just $34,882. Call 888-536-8017.
All come with a Carfax report and our lowest price promise. Pre-auction blowout. 24/7 at sunburymotors.com, at the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at our dealership, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.
Here at REW Financial, we strive every day to bring the best opportunities to the table to enhance your financial future in a comfortable, no-pressure environment. We know the importance of gaining and keeping the highest level of trust from you, our community of clients and friends. We are in Brook Park Farm, Lewisburg. Call 800-609-9484 or visit us at rewfinancial.com. REW Financial, empowering freedom, one family at a time.
Securities and advisory services offered through United Planners Financial Services, member FINRA SIPC. REW Financial is a DBA of REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC, and neither are affiliated with United Planners.
Welcome. Great to have you with us. Thursday edition brought to you by Rick Weibel at REW Financial. 800-609-9484. Go to rewfinancial.com. Mark Daniels, play-by-play voice of Central Florida, scheduled at 3:35. Buehner in the house. Kevin running the controls.
Kevin, very excited about traveling up to the Finger Lakes on Saturday with Bucknell.
I got a week to worry about that.
Oh, that's right. It's a week to worry about that.
Yeah, I got a week to worry about that.
Kevin's going up there with the idea that if he can get Birdsong to say, convince him, can we go to Watkins Glen? It's really close. It's really close. Let's go to Watkins Glen. It's really close.
Actually, Birdsong wouldn't mind doing that.
I think. Well,
why don't you go over there and see the track?
Because there's one little issue. There's a football game right in the middle of the trip.
I thought it was the winery tours. There's actually
you leave earlier, okay? You go over there, you take a look at the track, because they're not going to let you in.
Early?
Yeah.
Ugh, what a horrible word. Leave earlier.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Make your own mistakes. We're looking forward to the game. We're going to have Peter McKenna on the Penn State football show tonight from Crow Park. And then we're going to have another guest in the pregame on Saturday from Crow Park. Because with Penn State UCF playing this game, they not only have brought in an entire contingent, including Steelers owner Dan Rooney, the former ambassador to Ireland. And by the way, I do have a series of questions from Kevin for Dan Rooney about the football team.
Yeah, boy, there's only one paper? I thought sure I made more than one paper's worth.
I threw out the others.
Oh.
Arnold Palmer, believe it or not, is here today at Toft Trees. Nice to have him back in town.
What's Arnie doing?
It was something in conjunction with the Village at Penn State he came in.
I'm really glad you didn't say playing golf, because I realized I opened the door to that comment.
No. I don't know. It had to do with the Village at Penn State. You know, so he came in for that, which is great. Nice to have him here.
Favorite son of Latrobe, Pennsylvania.
He won a couple of golf tournaments on the white course back in the 50s, the early 50s.
Is that
so
right?
So State College actually holds a spot for him, just like Jim Furyk won the state golf championship on the blue course in 1987. So there's certain connections with certain guys to this area. He's one of them. He came back here today, which is really great. The Oklahoma State thing. There's some interesting things about the Oklahoma State thing. I know Kevin, of course, is ready to already put them in the electric chair. I've done some investigating into this. Many of the interviews were done without tape recorders. I find that interesting and too much reliance on memory.
Don't some of these things go back at least a dozen years, 10, 12 years?
Right, but why do you have interviews that are done from memory and not from actual recorded quotes? I mean, here's Sports Illustrated. It's a five-part series. They've invested a lot in it. And I think before Oklahoma State starts apologizing, and which they've done already, you can't panic manage these things. You have to smartly manage these things. Panic management gets you nowhere except in trouble. I mean, what's next? We drew a red line. No, I didn't say that. it's just the kind of thing where you have to take it a step at a time and realize what you're dealing with first. And then as more information comes out, such as, what do you mean you didn't tape record any interviews? What do you mean you didn't do that? What do you mean those are sort of direct quotes? They've got an issue with that right now.
I think they are, as a magazine, struggling to be relevant, and I think they've tried to go the way of expose journalism. They think it keeps the circulation going, and so they're willing to take a journalistic risk.
But I think the problem is Sports Illustrated, which I thought was a reputable magazine over the years.
It is.
In sports.
It is.
Is taking a five-part series and now, and really putting themselves out on a limb here if this story is incorrect. I mean, there is a lot of issues for sports. I mean, it could be the end of Sports Illustrated if they find this is incorrect in a major way, because there's going to be lawsuits that will cost them millions.
Well, what's interesting, though, is that will there be lawsuits?
Well,
because if you can threaten a lawsuit, but guess what? The second you have to put money on the table to sue, which means you have to go on the witness stand – which then means, uh-oh, I think you're not going to see, if you don't see lawsuits, that tells you it's true.
Well, the other side of that is T. Boone Pickens, the Texas oil man and benefactor of Oklahoma State to the tune of $500 million in gifts to his alma mater.
Yes.
He was on yesterday on national television and was commenting about his disappointment in Sports Illustrated because, as you said, many journalistic shortcuts and many rumors, innuendo, and like lots of hearsay. And he was intimating that he would consider funding some of these legal actions for defamation, invasion of privacy against right. Sports Illustrated. So he's a man with what we call in the law a deep pocket.
But it, have you guys heard
I will
his...
say this, though, but let's one quick thing about T. Boone Pickens. The article specifically points out none of the allegations deal with him. Zero.
But he was greatly offended,
right.
You could say, yesterday.
Oh, he was.
Yeah.
Yes, he was greatly offended, Bob. I'm saying Pickens comes from a different area. I'm going to fund this and the whole thing. He's not implicated.
No.
Okay? So since he's not implicated, he actually has some independence to do this because even Sports Illustrated admits he has nothing to do with this at all.
Because, you know, he would be the likely target of some speculation because of his...
Of course.
Because of the money he has and his desire to see Oklahoma State rise to the top of the football pyramid, so to speak.
But have you guys read what and seen his statement? I mean, this is one of those really weird statements, in my opinion. The first two lines, there's one word I have for the Sports Illustrated reporting on Oklahoma State University, disappointing. Okay, I get that. Here's the line that I found was very interesting. This series is not reflective of Oklahoma State University today. Many of their sensational allegations go back a decade ago. Yeah. There's no denying there. There's no defense there. It's almost an inadvertent admission.
Well, Kevin, don't take it too far. Don't read too much. Just slow down.
Yeah.
On all of this stuff, everybody needs to slow down. And I said this right away. You have to sit back. And you have to look and find out what, if anything, is true. If it is true, you then need to own up to it, and then you need to make adjustments.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's not true, you need to fight like hell, because you cannot have your reputation besmirched by something that's not true. So if it's not true, you got to, in anything in life that's not true, fight your guts out against it. Don't give up if it's not true, ever. I mean, it may cost you some money, but you know, you have to somehow fight back on things. You just can't roll over for people.
All right, well, let me read you another paragraph that I found interesting, and you tell me what you think about it. But I do welcome this scrutiny. If people take the time, it's an opportunity to better understand where Oklahoma State is today, not a decade ago. It's a different university today. It's a better university. If there are areas we need to improve, we'll do it.
Well, that's just covering his bases. That's all. In case something's true, I mean, that's just an intelligent comment. I mean, there's nothing wrong with having an intelligent comment of I don't really know what is and isn't true, so I'm going to make sure I cover my bases. I want to fight for anything that is not true, and by the way, if anything is true, we should make adjustments. There's nothing wrong with that statement for somebody who doesn't have all the information.
And he's one smart man. He didn't get to be a billionaire because he's a just out of the pumpkin patch.
Oh, absolutely not. And he has thrown a lot of his money into Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State's not a university that's been immune to tragedy. They've had tragedy with a women's basketball coach a couple of years ago.
That airplane crash.
Airplane crash with the basketball team where they lost two of the basketball players, the broadcaster, the whole thing where they were flying those three small planes out of Colorado that night. So they've had tragedy on that campus. They've gone through a lot, and I think we just need to all sit back, read it, not assume that's it, they're done. You have to have something to look into it and get both sides of the story and find out what's going on, because there are a lot of names linked in there. Of course, the most sensational name of all is LSU's Les Miles. So, I mean, you have to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's too much of a quick... Okay, that's it. We got him. Okay, let's go to the next thing. Can't do that. Nope. Too many names, too many lives affected. Okay? More care needs to be taken. We head to the news at the bottom of the hour. We're going to talk with Mark Daniels, the play-by-play voice of UCF football. Today's show brought to you by Rick Weibel at REW Financial. 800-609-9484.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us. Great to have Buhner on board.
Thank you, Steve.
Great to have Buhner on board. All right.
Kevin working on playoff predictions.
Yeah, Kevin, we're heading into the third week of the high school football season. How's the playoff picture shaping up?
I do have the District 4 points accumulated for the first 2 weeks. But
yeah,
I have
how's
not...
how's the playoff picture shaping up?
It's still too close to call, Steve. Still too close to call.
Be honest. You've looked.
I just looked at the points. That's all I've looked at so far.
You've looked, haven't you? You started figuring it out, didn't you?
Oh, no, 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 no. I told you, week five. Week five, I start looking ahead a little bit.
You did it week three last year.
It was
year.
Not week three.
Buhner and I were in hysterics.
Absolutely.
Remember my exact quote? There's still 7 weeks to go.
No, it was week five because you said there's still half the season to go.
Right. That's when we got to week five because you started in week three.
I did not start in week three.
Kevin getting very excited.
Excuse me. 800-795-9565. Tell me I'm wrong out there. Okay, I have thousands of people to back me up on this, okay? We need to bring in Mark Daniels, the play-by-play voice of UCF football. Mark, great to have you with us. I'm sure I have questions for you. You probably have questions for me.
What's the weather? Because it's 92 here right now. There's a rumor it's going to be a little bit cooler up there, so I'm looking for some fall weather. So let's start there. Is it going to be cooler?
65 degrees, Mark, and maybe 63 at kickoff. So it's going to be almost 30 degrees cooler what you're experiencing right now and less humidity.
No, you don't know humidity. Come on. We know humidity
down here.
Come on.
I know you're an expert on humidity in Orlando. I got it. Okay?
Right.
I know you are an expert on that. But in a relative sense, there is some up here, but there won't be any on Saturday. How about that?
All right. That's a good deal. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. So, you know, no Hawaiian shirt. Okay. Now.
I'm ready.
You're all set. George O'Leary has had three seasons, 10 wins or better. What has he done for the reputation of UCF in a state that certainly is heavily populated by many FBS schools?
Well, you know, when Coach got here, UCS program had really bottomed out. And he came in, and like a lot of new coaches, it wasn't just changing a roster. It was changing a culture. UCF really had struggled at the end of the previous coach's tenure. And we went 0-11, and it was a real struggle that first year. And, you know, you began to see Coach wanted to recruit a different type of player, a little bit tougher player. Once he found that style of player, then it was a matter of getting – you know, skill players and try to win some recruiting battles. There's no shortage of skill players in Florida, quarterbacks and running backs and wide receivers, secondary. It was to build up a line and develop a reputation of being a tough defensive team. And by the time UCF went into Conference USA and spent 8 years there, I think you can make the case that UCF was the most physical team in the league. Now, we may have not have been the most dynamic offensively in a league that played that spread a lot, but we were certainly the most physical team. In the 8 years, played in four title games, won two of those championships. And I think in coaches, now a decade there, he's built a program that, can compete on a week-to-week basis. They're not in awe of any place they go. They certainly respect quality opponents like this week. But I think he has a team believing now that we can go into some homes and recruit people against some of the bigger schools in the state and other schools in the country. And then every Saturday, whenever you play, you have a chance to go out and compete if you perform. And, he's got players that have bought into that, and I think that's why they've had some success being consistent and being able to win 8, 9, or 10 yearly. That's been a little bit up and down, although I think they're a little bit more consistent these days.
Godfrey, been the quarterback, leaves, comes back, told point blank, you're not going to play quarterback if you come back. How has he made the adjustment to wideout? And at the same time, what role did having a presence of a kid like Bortles on the roster play in that decision?
Well, Jeff Godfrey was freshman of the year in Conference USA, and for UCF, their big bowl went over Georgia, the Liberty Bowl. He played hurt in that game, and for that, he becomes sort of a hero for UCF. But Jeff had some issues both off the field and in the classroom, and some things got pretty ugly at the end of his sophomore year. He left the program, and Blake Bortles was there as a redshirt freshman. It was kind of the relief pitcher that came in every game. And what was an odd season 2 years ago. And Jeff really grew up in a summer. He became a father. Now he has two children and kind of refound himself, came back to talk to Coach O'Leary and said, I'd like to play. And Coach said, it's okay by me, but you have to convince your teammates. And it wasn't just a speech to say, hey, I'm back. He had to convince them that he was apologetic for what took place before. And it was pretty clear that UCF had a quarterback. But Jeff came back, accepted his role as a slot receiver. He's tremendously quick. And I think Coach O'Leary would tell you, if he had to pick perhaps the most mature person that has grown as a man in the last couple of years, I think Coach O'Leary and the team would probably unanimously vote Jeff Godfrey, who has been fantastic in accepting his role and is a key wide receiver for Blake Bortles. And Blake's done a great job to earn the position. He's grown the last couple of years. The game has slowed down for him now. He's got a good group of wide receivers that he uses well. UCF has opened up the playbook more for him. And he's a guy that, next couple of years, if he plays well, I think we'll get a chance to play at the next level at 6'4", 235, that can run and has a great touch in the ball. So that's kind of how the quarterback position evolved in the last couple of years.
And, Mark, I was going to ask you about the maturity of Blake Bortles. I mean, what are the differences you see in him from the guy that the Penn State fans have a chance to see Saturday to the one that played, say, at Ohio State a year ago?
He was kind of he was. I mean, the Ohio State game was the second game of the starter. We had won the week before at Akron, but won rather easily. But all of a sudden you realize, hey, that defense is pretty good, and those linebackers can run, and those secondary guys can cover. He became a little bit more of a gambler, trying to force passes into coverage and stuff. But as the year went along, you began to see a quarterback that was a lot more confident in his ability, started trusting his wide receivers that they would be there running the right routes. And you could see the game slow down for Blake. By the time UCF hit its bowl game last year, there's no question who was in charge of the huddle. It was no longer, hey, let's look at the sideline to see what they want to run. Blake was a leader, had a great offseason. And without a doubt, is one of the leaders of this football team now. Top physical kid, a little bit of that kind of loose screw at moments, in the sense that he's not afraid to lower his shoulder and pick up that extra yard, but smart enough to trust his offensive line and allow a play to develop. And with that, Charlie Taft, the offensive coordinator, has opened up the playbook more. Not much in these first two games, but in camp, they worked on some things that UCF didn't do last year.
With Mark Daniels, the play-by-play voice of UCF football, and Mark, to balance this offense, they dipped into Miami, and they were able to get Storm Johnson the transfer. He's one of three guys that play that spot, but he's the primary guy. What does he mean to balancing off what Bortles wants to do?
Well, for Storm, Georgia Leary will tell you, if we're going to run, just get me 4 yards in the first quarter and run consistently, and that 4 yarder becomes six in the third and fourth quarter if you've worn down a defense. Now, Storm is the type of guy, though, that he's not a big bruising back. He's the type of guy that he can turn an 8-yard gain into a 60-yard gain. And UCF fans have kind of waited for that. He showed some big playability briefly at Miami. He has shown flashes of it these first two games. But, as Coach O'Leary reminds me and others, Storm really didn't play a lot of football the last couple of years. He sat behind Latavius Murray, now with the Raiders, who had a great season last year. But now he's getting the ball. What we don't know yet is if Storm can be a guy that can carry the ball 20, 25 times a game. And my feeling is Georgia Leary won't expect him to do that. That's why they use 2-3 backs. But he's a big play guy where that now forces the defense to say, hey, where is he? When he gets the football, he's got great speed outside. That's what makes defenses have to account for him, because he can be pretty electric.
The defense has only given up the 7 so far. we know about the competition. You've already outlined that. So, Mark, when you look at them, what are a couple of areas where you know they should have confidence no matter what, because regardless of opponent, they're going to be really good? And what are a couple of question marks they still have?
You know, coming into the season, UCS linebackers were a question mark, and I still think that's fair, even though Terrence Plummer, the middle linebacker, has got 17 tackles through two games. He got seven unassisted tackles last week. But I think it's a valid question there. UCS had some kids that have kind of been a little bit undersized and then tend to play above that with their physical play. So I'll be curious the next 2 weeks, Penn State and then actually a bye week, and then South Carolina, how they play. Two good defensive tackles for UCF. E.J. Dunston, Demetrius Anderson, who's a transfer from Western Michigan that thought about coming to UCF 3 years ago, now is here. The ends, fast, a little bit undersized. You'll see some young guys play. Part of the rotation is a freshman, a true freshman, Blake Keller. He only weighs 225, but just finds a way to get to the quarterback. UCF secondary, its corners incredibly young but talented. Their safeties are their most experienced. Clayton Gathers is probably an all-conference player for UCF, and then Brandon Alexander, they moved over. They play a lot of nickel and dime packages, and with the way Penn State has shown some offense, probably play a lot of that. What has not happened in these first two games is no one's tested UCF deep. No one's thrown the ball downfield. Akron's longest play was 13 yards. FIU's longest play came when the game was well out of breach, and even then it wasn't 30 yards. So I'll be curious with a very talented wide receiver, obviously, for Penn State, and tight ends and talented backs, how they try to test UCF 10, 15, and then some deep balls down the field, because UCF has not had that done yet. Plus, they haven't blitzed much yet either in these first two games.
Mark, it's been obviously conference merry-go-round, because next year the Big Ten will get Rutgers, Maryland. We know after this year Louisville goes to the ACC, where Pitt and Syracuse have already landed. In the end, there's no Conference USA. Now there's the American. For UCF, was that a good landing spot?
Well, it's better than Conference USA, and I don't mean that as a criticism. For the 8 years that UCF was in Conference USA, it was a very good league for them, and they had success. Clearly, UCF thought it was going into a different league. Back then, it was the Big East. We thought the Big East was going to keep some presence of what it had been. The thought was it would keep, then we thought, a BCS slot. And the biggest thing was the media money. There was a sense that going into the Big East could have been anywhere from $6 to $10 to $12 million of media money. Well, right now the American, UCF, is making a little bit more than what it had made in Conference USA. And as you guys know, that's a huge factor. Instead of having 10 years of making $10 million for $100 million, now you're probably going to make about $20 million over 10 years. That's different in the standpoint of your budget and your facilities. Look, the best thing UCF can do is be competitive in football on a year-to-year basis, as well as the other sports. Where the future is in conference realignment, who really knows? I don't know how much more we're going to see. The one thing that does bother me, and I admit my bias towards UCF, is when people talk about a breakaway or the Power Five or a fourth division, I'm just curious who gets to play Oz and determine who's part of that.
About that one. How about that one is right. Very quickly, I know on TV I asked you this as well, but the Crow Park deal, that was supposed to be UCF's home game. They give it up to do this. What was the initial reaction to giving up the game to go over there?
Well, I think to UCF's credit and also to Penn State, they quickly began to sell the reasons why the game was going to be played. One is great opportunity, wonderful exposure. We understand for Penn State it's an opportunity without a bowl game, and I think it's wonderful. For UCF, it's great. Opportunity to get yourself on that nationally televised game that first Saturday of the season. Promote your brand internationally. There's no downside to that. What made it an easier blow for UCF was the understanding that Penn State had scheduling options. And these days you can schedule games with somebody and you can back out of it. UCF deals with that all the time. The number of BCS schools the last 4 years that have dropped UCF, you need a second hand to count. And George O'Leary is adamant that he wants, if I'm coming to your place, you're coming to our place. This was special for obvious reasons, O'Brien, O'Leary. But UCF had seven home games already. So losing this game, they still had six. BYU comes to us next year. There's some attractive conference games. So I think fans understand it. They may get a little bit angry next year when they realize, wow, the game is not here. But I think you'll see a number of UCF people come over. I don't know how many that is. But I think it'll be exciting, just the national exposure that it will get. And look, if both teams have a good season this year, hopefully it's a really big game next year too.
And plus the humidity is lower in Dublin. All right. Mark, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Look forward to seeing you on Saturday.
Okay, thank you very much. Take care.
Mark Daniels, the play-by-play voice of UCF football. We'll come back. Today's show being brought to you by our good friends at REW Financial. Good friend Rick Weibel. Lee, good afternoon to you as well. Give them a call at 800-609-9484 or go online to rewfinancial.com here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Welcome back. Great to have you with us. I thought Mark gave us some great insight into their program. 4:06, we're going to check in with Corey Geiger, his thoughts on the Sports Illustrated article and some of the information he has.
Ooh, that'll be interesting. I'm looking forward to that one. I'll be interested to hear what he has to say about it.
I'll have him for about 5 minutes or so.
I heard a comment last night on the news, some commentary that said, you know, they spent more time investigating Oklahoma State a decade ago than they did on the Benghazi attack on the U.S. Embassy. And kind of, you know, is this where the media is today, investigating old claims about a football program when far more important things deserve to be scrutinized by the media than an old story about Oklahoma State football?
That's grossly unfair, and the reason it's grossly unfair is Sports Illustrated does not cover
exactly
international events. You cover what you cover. You know, I'm the play-by-play guy for Penn State football and basketball and the Spikes, and that's what I do. I'm not an investigative reporter. The investigative reporter at WNEP in Scranton is not supposed to investigate Benghazi. Now, at the network level, they should be investigating Benghazi, without question. Four Americans died, including Seth Smith, who was a part of the Penn State World Campus program. And, you know, so that should be, because nobody's been caught yet for doing that. That absolutely needs intense scrutiny and investigation. But Sports Illustrated's job is not to investigate Benghazi. It is to be a sports outlet. And if they want to take time themselves as a sports outlet to investigate Oklahoma State, then they're just doing their job. And when people start crossing over from one to the other, I just sit back and say, you have to be kidding me. Do you understand jobs and roles? If you'd like it, we could go over to the factory and tell everybody how to make better widgets.
Understood. I think Sports Illustrated, let me back up. When something like this happens to an institution like an Oklahoma State, I think your comments and advice are well taken, or should be well taken. Sit back, take a deep breath, absorb everything, think about what you're going to say as an institution, and don't react and in a panic mode. And we'll see how Oklahoma State handles this. I mean, we obviously have not heard the last of this from either Sports Illustrated and or Oklahoma State and or coaches and or participants. There's a lot at stake here.
Well, there's a lot at stake, and reputations, of course, being one of them. You know, Les Miles' reputation is at stake. Mike Gundy's reputation is at stake. The athletic director's reputation is at stake. So there are a lot of things at stake here as to what goes on here. Also, Sports Illustrated's reputation is at stake. They've invested a five-part series exposing these problems. Is it accurate? That's a big question going into it. All right, because it's in print doesn't necessarily make it accurate. And we've had too many stories over time that were sensational at the moment and ended up not being accurate. Duke lacrosse is an obvious one where, again, sensationalism, all of a sudden when it was done, everybody went, oh.
Yeah, and we had a district attorney disbarred as a result of right. The longer view on what really happened. But right. I remember the shrill voices and shrieks coming from a certain crowd, you know, demanding heads roll at Duke. And it took, what, 2 years before the whole thing really unraveled?
Right, and the lacrosse coach lost his job over it. And on top of that, you know, then you have, I mean, and when you talk about reputations, what's Richard Jewell's reputation?
Yeah, the Atlanta Bomber. And turns out he wasn't.
Please tell me what he did. He did absolutely nothing. He was exactly as he was portrayed that night. He was a hero that night. Well, unfortunately, his reputation got dragged through the mud, and it was wrong. So we have to be, instead of jumping on the bandwagon of, aha, I think you have to jump on the bandwagon of caution and say, okay, let's get all the evidence and see how this plays out. Now, that's far more boring. That's not as exciting as jumping on the aha bandwagon, because jumping on the aha bandwagon and joining the rest of the world and going, aha, 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 and you're part of the pack. Being part of the pack is cool, okay? But being the one that sits back and says, wait a minute, let's take a closer look, is actually the wiser one than the pack mentality, which usually leads down to a path of ignorance. And I think a lot of people know exactly what I'm talking about when I talk about the pack mentality leading down the road of ignorance.
No question. And, you know, in this 24-hour news cycle we live in, it just exacerbates it even more. And with social media and being able to Twitter this and Twitter that, it just compounds everything. Oh. And it forces people to react when they should be reflecting.
And it's caused, by the way, an ADD mentality in the country, because what happens is every time you turn around, well, you got to think about this. You got to think. And it's like everything's going so fast now. One day of Oklahoma State, now you're hearing about five SEC players. Nationally, you're talking about Syria. One day, next week, it's going to be the budget, because guess what? They have to have a continuing resolution on the budget next week. Uh-huh.